The highly infectious Omicron variant of COVID-19 has spread across the country just as schools are coming back from winter break. Take a listen to U.S. Education Secretary Miguel Cardona on Fox News earlier this week.
You know, we've been very clear. Our expectation is for schools to be open full-time for students, for in-person learning.
The majority of districts nationwide are reopening in person, but across the country, over 3,000 schools announced that they are either going virtual to start the year or bumping back in-person school, including some districts in Wisconsin. And schools with in-person learning in many cases are trying to stay safe with widespread testing, which brings challenges of its own. We're talking about how schools are coping as the country is hit with another wave of COVID cases, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. Students, staff, teachers, and parents, we especially want to hear from you. What is happening right now in your district? Are you back in person? Were you bumped back a day or two? A little bit of virtual on the way? And what do you think of that decision, whichever one it is? What challenges are you seeing when it comes to staffing, to testing? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. John Diamond is a professor of sociology and education policy at Brown University, a former professor at UW-Madison. He's co-author of Despite the Best Intentions, How Racial Inequality Thrives in Good Schools. John, welcome back to Central Time.
Oh, thanks so much. I'm glad to be here.
Well, you have your eye here in Wisconsin still, I think. What are we seeing in Wisconsin schools when it comes to this decision of opening day coming out of the winter break?
Yeah, I mean, I think Wisconsin is dealing with the similar issues to the rest of the country with the Omicron variant spreading so quickly. I know both Madison and Milwaukee have put a pause on starting up in-person instruction and gone virtual for a short period of time. And I think it's, you know, largely because we're dealing with a situation where we don't really have many good choices. I think schools are dealing with, you know, at least three issues simultaneously. It's the pandemic itself and the health consequences of it. It's, you know, what that does for the daily routines of schools. And then there are the politics that have made things even more difficult to deal with. So I think we're dealing with those health concerns, those regular routines being disrupted and having to adapt in the moment. And then there are the political dynamics that play themselves out in the context of schools in ways that are not always helpful.
Let's look at one aspect of that disruption routine, and that's staffing. We heard from Jim, who wrote on a WPR.org article, a comment section. He wrote, lack of substitute teachers is what forces school districts to go virtual. Jim says, I substitute in two districts in southeastern Wisconsin with a surge in cases. I've made the choice to quit exposing myself to the rampant spread of COVID. Fewer subs are willing to expose themselves to getting sick from COVID for the $100 to $120 bucks a day that most districts pay. Substitute teachers, we see the Cap Times reports, so the Madison School District having a record number of positive tests for staff over the last couple of weeks. How big a problem, John, is it just to have people in the schools to do the job?
It's a very big problem, and I think that's one reason that schools are making the decision to go virtual temporarily. I mean, what happens when there is one case in a school and that one person has contact with several people, that means that you have to have a response. When one person gets COVID and one teacher gets COVID and they're out and many people have been exposed, you run into the challenge of people having to sort of quarantine or isolate themselves. And that's one of the reasons that the CDC recently reduced the number of days that people needed to be out of work or recommended to be out of work, because with the number of cases we're getting with Omicron, it's almost as if we quarantine for 10 days, the society will shut down, right? And schools are no different. So as this person has said, you know, coming to school, putting yourself at risk, and also putting others at risk is a choice that some people don't want to make. And that's in some ways, we've seen that happen in some of the major school districts in Chicago, New York, where there's conflict between the teachers union and district management leadership, because teachers are concerned about being in these situations where their health is placed at risk and other people who are not obligated to be in school, substitute teachers, may make other decisions. So it's a fundamental problem for us to deal with.
You also mentioned the politics surrounding this here in Wisconsin. We have one likely Republican challenger for governor taking out an ad this week pointing toward the Madison and Milwaukee delays, saying, you know, they're attacking that idea, saying as governor, she wouldn't allow schools to do this. Could you talk about how much that that idea that politicians are looking over their shoulders is influencing school district decision making?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that happens in states like Wisconsin is you have competing ideas and competing ideologies that are coming into play. But I think one of the things we really have to pay attention to is we really need to be focused on the science. What is the science telling us about the consequences of closing and the consequences of staying open? And what we have too often is people playing politics with those decisions. For example, even having conversations about masking, social distancing, and vaccines has become a highly politicized set of issues, when in reality, we know that masks work, that masks can be protective, and that high-quality masks can really mitigate the spread of COVID. We know that vaccines keep people out of the hospital. We know that they keep people from dying from COVID. But we have these contentious arguments and debates about vaccinations. And this is something that has traditionally been a debate that happens around vaccinations amongst a subset of the population. Most people to go to school had to be vaccinated against certain conditions and diseases. And so in the contemporary context, given the way that things started at the beginning of the pandemic and the sort of deeply polarized country that we live in, we can't even make decisions that are scientifically based without people spreading misinformation and creating arguments that are largely across party lines, Democrat and Republican.
This reminds me of the last time I talked to you about these issues. I think it was back in 2020, this lose-lose thing where, yes, being in person in schools is not risk-free. There are risks and consequences there. Not being in schools, there are risks and consequences to learning, maybe to social well-being for kids. How do we balance those two things out?
I mean, I think we have to have a discussion and conversation that is rooted in the best evidence that we have, right? We know that young people can go to school relatively safely with the proper mitigation strategies in place. The problem is when we try to put those mitigation strategies in place, they've turned board meetings into contentious battles over things like masking, right? And we also know that when young people are at home, there are some deleterious consequences that can happen. So the best thing for us to do, in my estimation, is to take the science seriously, try to figure out when it is prudent to keep young people away from school, which I actually think is prudent at this moment with the spread of Omicron, to keep people out of school temporarily because of the consequences of a spread in cases and what that means for disruptions that could be longer term. But we also just really have to attend to how do we do it safely and for people to go along with those mitigation strategies that are most effective.
Talking to John Diamond, professor of sociology and education policy at Brown University, looking at schools, a new beginning for the school year, coming back from winter break amid the Omicron outbreak, and some schools putting off in person for a couple of days, maybe more, a little bit of virtual, a lot of schools going in person, trying to get testing. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think schools should do, especially maybe in your local area? If you have a stake in this as a student, parent, teacher, administrator, love to hear from you at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. John, I know a concern you have is of unequal outcomes in schools, even in normal times when it comes to things like resources for schools. Are we paying enough attention to how particular districts, maybe in some of these big city districts we've been talking about, are affected by resources when it comes to dealing with this latest COVID surge?
Yeah, I mean, I think what COVID has done is it's shown a light on many of our cleavages in our society and social class inequality, racial inequality, and other forms of inequality have in some ways been exacerbated by the pandemic. And so it is important for us to pay attention to those things. There's been a lot of discussion about the loss of learning that happens for young people who aren't in school and how the consequences of that are greater for young people whose families are not wealthy, for young people in certain communities. So I do think it's really important for us to pay attention to those issues of inequality. But I will continue to say that, you know, I still believe that young people are resilient. I still believe that the loss of a few days of school or some period of school can be overcome. But the health consequences, I think, need to really be driving our decision making as much as possible. And we need to sort of create more effort to address the sort of inequalities that emerge. But I think the health consequences are really important for us to consider. And I also would just add to that, that I think we've, you know, unfortunately seen a failure in a number of ways in our society as a whole. First, to take the pandemic seriously. Second, to do the things that we needed to do to sort of mitigate the consequences. And most recently, to not allow our politics to overwhelm our common sense around some of the critical issues that we need to be addressing. So I think we, you know, kind of need a reset in some ways. We need to understand what we need to move forward. And that means across the federal, state, local levels, and our individual decisions, we need to be figuring out how do we move forward from this as opposed to continue to cycle in a negative direction.
Talking to John Diamond from Brown University, looking at how schools are coping with the Omicron surge just after winter break, some putting off reopening, most going back as scheduled. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Should schools be open this week for in-person learning? What's been your biggest challenge in the last 2 years? The schools have gone back and forth between in-person and virtual learning. If you're a parent, what do you want to see happen? Has your district bumped back a couple days? What's that meant for your schedule, your work, your childcare? If you work in a school, do you want to be there? If you're one of those substitute teachers, are you maybe not taking those jobs for a week or two? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now we're picking up our talk with John Diamond, Professor of Sociology and Education Policy at Brown University, talking with us about schools coping with another COVID surge, with leaders including President Biden pushing in-person learning, some districts delaying reopening, starting off with a couple of virtual days along the way. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can email ideas@WPR.org. Especially love to hear from parents, students, staff at schools, what you're seeing, what you wish you were seeing. Let's go to your calls now. Rebecca is with us in Manitowoc. Rebecca, hi.
Yes, hello. I just wanted to comment or just offer some insight, I guess, on just the damage that's done when kids are kept home, because I have two children. Last year during the shutdown, we're both in high school, and when the school shut down and they became virtual learners, their grades suffered, and one of them actually became very depressed and suicidal, and we had to start counseling. And these are both straight-A students. Both my kids were straight-A scholarship students and were failing classes because that social life that they rely so heavily on just disappeared overnight. They're both in extracurriculars and sports, and everything that they hold dear and love disappears overnight. And I think, you know, the discussion is always about the grade school children, but let's talk about the high school children and what happens to them when we shut down classes. Most of these kids are close to adulthood. Most of them are vaccinated. Let's not shut down the schools and let's leave it up to, you know, masking and distancing and those sort of things, because I think it's way more damaging.
Rebecca, thank you so much for sharing that story. Best to your kids. Hope they've bounced back from that. John, what do you think? Mental health concerns, social and grade concerns from Rebecca and her kids.
Yeah, I think Rebecca's comments are really important to keep in mind. And there are consequences for young people who are out of school. And I know some students suffer academically. my own son actually did well being out and thrived in certain ways, but I know many young people had serious struggles being at home, and the mental health consequences I think are important to keep in mind. I think we've all had some mental health consequences, even though we may not always acknowledge it. But I think another point that Rebecca made is really important, that we need to make sure that we're making in-person learning as safe as possible. We've had sort of a fundamental failure in getting testing, making testing available. We've had challenges getting people to do things like wear masks. We've had other kinds of challenges around, she mentioned vaccination, around getting enough people vaccinated to sort of keep the spread down. So I think, yes, we need to be aware of what's lost when young people are out of school, but we need to do the things to make it possible for them to be there as well.
Rebecca, thanks again for sharing your experience. We'll go now to Lauren in Madison. Lauren, hello.
Hi. I'm wondering, from Dr. Diamond's research, if he's done any research during these times around some of the effects of students, vulnerable students who, when schools are closed and parents have to go to work, what happens to those students, and do the health effects of going to school, is that worse than students who are left home alone without?
Lauren, thanks for the call. So kids who are at risk, who are home alone, John, instead of being at school.
Right. I mean, there is good research that sort of speaks to what happens to young people when they're at home. And, you know, those young people who are at home, who have substantial resources and may even have a parent who's home and can sort of help them with school, are definitely at an advantage. And those young people who don't have those things, there need to be some things put in place to make sure that they're not just at home and vulnerable. I mean, it speaks to larger issues and problems with regard to the sort of safety net that we have, the vulnerability of a lot of families in terms of having those additional resources, the ways we provided support for people who are out of work or struggling financially. So there are bigger issues that are driving these challenges. But I think, you know, the comments that people are making do point to the fact that we're in a situation where we don't have a lot of good choices. And I think what that means is we need to be as clear-headed as possible about how to make the damage, how to reduce the damage as much as possible, as opposed to arguing all or nothing, one or the other, or falling back on political ideology.
Thanks again for that call at 800-642-1234. Patty joins us now in Birchwood. Patty, hi.
Hi. I appreciate this discussion. Absolutely agreed. This pandemic has shown us how little we have regard for a social safety net. I'm a substitute teacher up in Birchwood. I would love to go back, but the school district doesn't require masks, and it doesn't require their people to be vaccinated. And so I won't go back because I also work another job and I don't want to spread it. And my concern is that it seems to be that the people in authority are kowtowing to the biggest bully in the room. The politics is the people that are yelling and screaming and making death threats. And I really think in order to not have a civil war, authority at all levels of government are just caving. And that really, really scares me.
Patty, thanks for sharing your experience as a substitute teacher. John, do you see what she's seeing, school districts caving to the loudest voices?
Yeah, I mean, I think I do. And I think there are some things that, you know, leadership sometimes means that you have to go against what the loudest voices are saying, right? But we don't really see that at the federal level, and we don't necessarily see it at the state level. Instead, we see, I think, people trying to score political points to make the other side angry, fall back on political ideology, as I said before. And I think sometimes leadership means you have to to step forward and do what's best for young people, as opposed to doing what is best for one's political gain or one's own position as a leader, for example. But I think the points that she raised are vital for us to pay attention to.
Thanks a lot for that call. In our last just over a minute now, John, can you paint us a picture of what you see as the ideal right now, this first school week of January, of how a school is going to handle this?
I mean, I think it depends on the school context. Personally, I feel like every school should require masks because we know they work. I think the federal government and others need to sort of make testing more readily available. But for schools, I think they do need to decide what's best in their local context. And I think all of the mitigation strategies need to be in place that are reasonable to make sure that the spread doesn't get out of control. Because what winds up happening is you start getting a spread of cases and basically nothing can work. So in places where there's a concern about cases spreading really quickly, I think it makes sense to take a quick hiatus to go virtual. And then hopefully in the next 2 to 3 weeks, opening up will make more sense and be a more viable option.
And just briefly, do you have any hope that the political temperature will dial down a little bit on this?
I wish it would. I'm not completely optimistic because the folks at the highest level of government don't seem to be interested in governing. And that sort of trickles down and it affects all of the levels of government and all of our individual lives.
John, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you so much.
John Diamond is a professor of sociology and education policy at Brown University, formerly with UW-Madison, co-author of Despite the Best Intentions, How Racial Inequality Thrives in Good Schools. He joined us today for a look at schools reopening or delaying reopening in some cases during this latest COVID surge. Still time for you to share your thoughts, your experiences in schools right now. You can email ideas@WPR.org, tweet us @CentralTimeWPR, and of course, follow reporting over at WPR.org.